Okay, welcome to this week's show. It's Monday the 8th of June, and this is the Register DR Roundup. And we've got a very special show for you today, because joining us, we have a big Register DR house crew in our virtual studio, and that includes Nicholas Bruce, voice of reason and head of business development.
Hello, everyone.
And it includes, as always, head of client services, the very nice and super effective Barbara Ruiz Alonso.
Morning, everyone.
And also, we're very glad to have back, joining us again in the virtual studio, is Lara Rodriguez, who is, of course, our institutional relations manager.
Hi, Andrew. Hi, everybody.
And last but never least, we have the acting chief operations officer for the United Kingdom and head of product in Europe, John Kern.
Morning, everyone. If I wasn't paranoid, Andrew, I begin to think you're trying to squeeze me out here.
You know, I'm saving dessert for after the main course, John. This week, joining us in the virtual studio, we have Danny Corrigan, who, of course, you will know, leading industry figure, was the CEO of CMETR, who are winding down their operations in the UK. And Danny has a new startup, the London Reporting House, which is an ancillary service provider, which is, as he's pointed out to me, an ESMA expression. It is not a legal definition. That's what ESMA call it. But Danny sits in that layer between market participants and TRs, and he is, of course, an expert on data quality. He's just generally speaking an authority on this space. So thank you very much for joining us on the Roundup, Danny.
Thank you very much, Andrew. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, that's great. Okay, good. But before we say anything else, this is a financial services podcast, and anything could happen in the next 15 minutes. So we are going to have our legal disclaimer, which this week we've set to some homegrown indie disco house. This podcast is sponsored by RegisTR and features members of the RegisTR team offering their personal opinions. It is not intended to be taken as any form of legal, tax, or other professional advice, and there is no representation made as to the accuracy or completeness of the information within it, nor does it necessarily reflect the opinions of RegisTR as an organization. All right, so as always here on the Roundup, we are spanning territories and time zones. And also, we've got our crystal balls out and we are looking deep into the future. Well, actually, post-December. It's not that far away now, come to think of it, is it? It's flying closer all the time. So, John, perhaps you would like to kick us off this week with your regular slot. John is always the bearer of good news with his Brexit update.
Yeah. I'm getting a bad reputation here. I'm normally a ray of sunshine in the office. I'm sure the guys will confirm. Anyway, on the 5th of June, the fourth round of the EU-UK future negotiations ended without significant areas of progress, as the EU chief Brexit negotiator Michel Barnier and his British counterpart David Frost still remain far apart on key issues such as the fishing rights, the level playing field, and the role of the European Court of Justice. As of next steps, EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, Council President Charles Michel, and UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson will meet by the end of June to decide how to proceed. This is important. By the end of June, both sides must also decide on a possible extension of the Brexit transition period beyond 2020. If they do not agree on an extension, the UK will leave the single market and the EU customs union on the 31st of December 2020. And if no agreement is reached by then, experts are predicting serious disruption to businesses, which are already, of course, afflicted by the COVID-19 pandemic. According to a report by the think tank UK in a Changing Europe, the British services industry is being left out of the EU-UK future negotiations, putting much of the economy at risk of being damaged, as services account for 80% of the country's economy and nearly 30 million jobs. Even if the EU and the UK would reach an agreement this year, the sector would still suffer, and without such an agreement, exporters would face significant barriers, as World Trade Organization rules are much weaker for services than goods, the think tank found. Financial services companies would then depend on a unilateral EU equivalence decision, which could be revoked at short notice. That's it from me. try to stay positive.
I'm going to dive in with Danny. How does that sound to you? Is the situation quite as precipitous as it sounds for UK participants in reporting regimes?
Whilst I agree with everything John just said, there will be a deal in October. It will be around fishing, it will be around the level playing field, and it will be around the role of the ECJ. I think enough has been done on that for the deals we've done for October. A lot around our part of the world, the financial services regulation, is outside these discussions because that's actually taken at levels between competent authorities and competent authorities. That's been ongoing. That's ready to go on a form of equivalence. It could evolve into something that used to happen in the US, which is called substitutive compliance, or mutual recognition, which is the deal that was recently done between Switzerland and the United Kingdom. I'm actually bullish that a deal will be done. It will be done this October.
Nick, Danny's crystal ball appears to be a significant upgrade on our usual one.
Oh, I've got to say, I've got a differing crystal ball compared to Danny's. So it's quite nice. I'm feeling quite positive now, which is a relief, because every week John gives an update. I think, what the hell's going on?
So on the basis that does happen, I think this is what will happen with regulation, is that if you think of the EU and in respect of what we're talking about, that's around EMEA and it's around MIFIR, and the UK, that will be UK's versions of EMEA and MIFIR. That won't change too much in terms of what's required and when and by whom. But I think what will change is the way it's done. And the path there, the speeds will be different, but it's absolutely aiming at the same goal, which is digitization. The way that data is sent in and volumes have never been higher, it's very difficult to manage that. The only way to do it is digitize it. Have a standardization, have a language. So it's going to be digitization and a language around that. There's something called the common data model. It could be that. Number two, it's going to be storing it in the cloud. And number three, it's going to be pulling. So the day will come when no one will send a report to Regis TR. And Regis TR will never send a report on for ESMA or the likes, the FCA in the UK. That day will come. And it would be for the regulators to go to the cloud and either pull standard reports, or write their own, or just pull data.
And so realistically, we might be looking in this sort of more advanced technological future of reporting a lot more data, or reporting different levels of data that go quite outside regulatory reporting into much more industry insight and visibility into the operations of participants within the trading space.
Andrew, that is it. So there's no point us gathering lots of data as now, right? You know, we're gathering all these files, we're getting Excel files in, converting them to CSV, sending them into files, they're tearing. There's so much data in there, tearing. So they get sent by FTP folders and they get plugged up at the pipes. What we're going to see as people move from Nexabyte and CME to the core trade repositories like Regis TR, that kind of business has to move with CFDs and so forth. It's honestly, it's ridiculous. The time is to look at it is now, because what you want to do is take that lot, put it in the cloud, but it's not just for regulatory information. We'll get that right. It's for management information. Because management will be able to have a picture there of where everything is. Because right now, thanks to regulatory reporting, they have a picture. Before, all those internal systems didn't talk to each other. They wrote APIs to each of them. And so internally, they try to get a picture. But this one is, management information should be real time, so should regulatory. You might not have to report it real time, but it should be there and available. The two then will sync. So if you're running a risk management system and you say, this is how much risk we have, the regulatory risk capital requirements and the prudential risk should be the same. And the only way you're going to get that, if it's there, and sheer volumes that are going on, especially in recent times, are going to suggest it has to happen. Last point on this is, imagine it's going to be that we're nearshoring, offshoring, we're all over the place. We cannot exist on CSV files. You've got to ease the burden on the trade repositories, ease the burden on the arms. And I think that'll come. And as I say, regulators are leading this. The firms are with them. It's like the Grand National all over Europe. I should tell you, we have a great horse race here, normally in April. And all the horses get ready to go over the jumps. It's in Liverpool. And they're all standing around, facing the wrong direction until they come under starter's orders, they call it. And off they go, heading off the Melling Lane, the first jumps and so forth.
How do market participants feel about a cloud-based transformation?
I think the question mark isn't if, it's when. And it's when will we be in a position that we can do that? And that's, this isn't a new discussion. I moved across from custody. People have talked about DLT in custody and actually how the role of the custodian will no longer be required. And the question marks around it is, with technology like DLT, et cetera, you have one golden source. You know, it's indisputable record. So what happens if it goes wrong, and when it goes wrong? Who's responsible for that? There's still a lot of things that need to be addressed, and they will be addressed over time. I don't think you'll see, you know, certainly not regulatory reporting being a first mover in those kind of circumstances. So I think it's once that technology is proven and trusted, I think it's going to be a direction of travel. But I don't think it, personally, I don't think it's the here and now.
In my perspective, and what I hear from clients is that they do want it. So as Danny is saying, it's something that it's coming. About the timing, it is not that clear to me. There's a lot of things to do, as Nick was saying, but it is definitely something that will happen and that our clients are already demanding, of course, especially the bigger clients with huge amount of data they want. Reports on the day, on demand, ad hoc, just made with specific fields. So this is what I want to monitor now. So I need this, and this other field, and I want it now between these dates. And this is something they are already asking us. So it is a lot of work to do also on the TR side, but it will definitely come, and it will be a huge change, I believe.
And I think actually, Barbara, to that point, probably you hear it from clients, and to Danny's point, is clients have got are reporting all of this data and they want to do more with it. And I mean, that's the key driver for this as well. I mean, that's absolutely what clients want.
It's also really, I suppose, if you look at it, it's one of the few things that a TR can do in terms of product innovation. I mean, we talked before about having, you know, relatively limited mandate from ESMA in terms of what we can do with the data. We can't anonymize and repackage or commercialize the data in any way. But the one thing we can do is use that data and provide information, valuable information, back to the customer who owns that data.
Okay, that sounds very exciting. You know, I love the idea of everything going digital and going into a sort of data mining, machine learning, analytics space, as that's my own background. I suppose ditching CSV files sounds scary, but, you know, if transfer agents can ditch their fax machines, I'm sure market participants can do that. But before that happens, we have to navigate some risky waters ahead. And I'm not an expert on risk, but the ESMA risk dashboard is flashing red. What does that mean? I'm scared. Laura, what does it mean?
Well, of course, this year the dashboard is driven completely by the COVID-19 pandemic and the uncertainty that still remains. So looking into the macroeconomic perspective, the governments and central bank have responded with massive fiscal and monetary policy measures. But of course, the size of the recession will depend on the time of the pandemic will last and the effectiveness of the policy measures. And in the middle of the uncertainty of COVID-19, the financial institutions should continue to prepare to the end of the UK transition period by the end of the year. So the scenario that ESMA described is quite challenging. And we can also see this in the key indicators that they included here.
Looking at the text, so taking away the fact that every colour seemed to be red, which I guess is what everyone expected in the current circumstances. And I think it was because one of the key concerns that they sort of highlighted was the fact that you'd actually seen a market rebound, but the fundamentals, really, when you look at economic activity, hadn't changed. There wasn't a rebound in economic activity because we were, you know, principally under lockdown in quarter one. So it's that risk of further corrections, the risk to investors, which I think they were flagging, which is important. And I think absolutely when you talk about the sort of the recovery, the long-standing impact of COVID, etc., I think when we first came into this crisis, I heard a lot of talk about, oh, it's going to be a V-shaped recovery. So you're going to have this initial drop off the face of a cliff, but suddenly everything's just going to bounce back. And clearly what we've discovered is that isn't going to be the case. You know, it's not quite a U-shape because we've fallen off the face of a cliff, but it's really intriguing when you you look through it, in the fact that there's so many underlying risks that we still got to face. I mean, I remember reading a couple of weeks ago now that I think Rolls-Royce are now classed, their corporate bonds are classed as junk. And you think about the number of industries that Rolls-Royce are affected by, aviation, you know, the motor industry, so it's all the travel underneath that. And I think there's some long-term risks that ESMA are really concerned about. It's an intriguing piece.
Well, I'm with Nick, what you just said there. What ESMA knows better than anyone else. ESMA was only formed for the following reason. In 2007-08, we had a financial crisis that led to an economic crisis, that led to a sovereign debt crisis. But that period was 4 years. Now we have a health crisis overlapping with an economic crisis, which will cause a financial crisis. We know there will be banks that will be in jeopardy, leading into a sovereign debt crisis. Those four, it will be concertinaed. So 2008 to 12, 4 years. Three crises, 4 years. This is four crises in the shortest period of time. If the volumes continue going out the way they are, because what Nick just said, isn't it extraordinary? The markets are on a high, the volumes have been great until now. And ESMA's job is double in jeopardy because there's got to be margin calls galore going on out there. They're going to work out what's going on. So take the model of why ESMA was ever formed, why we ever had a G20 in Pittsburgh in 2009. It's because of this. So health crisis still going on, but coming maybe to the end of the first phase of that one. Economic crisis, bang in the middle of that. Financial crisis hasn't hit yet, not fully. By that, I mean on the banks. See the quarterly numbers coming in? There'll be jeopardy. If you had a good organisation before this crisis, you might survive. If you were poor, as lots of the European banks were, you never can survive it.
Barbara, looking at the dashboard, looking at the mood out there with clients, is this sounding familiar to you now?
Well, I mean, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic made a lot of noise. Well, the whole semester of this year, well, from February, March. But what's to come, I think it's still not really kicking into the desk, into the client service desk yet. But of course it will. And I know the turbulent, how do you say, is it turbulent? Like, lots of movement is to come. Because to me it seems scary, all these landscape and predictions ESMA is highlighting, and just the way Daniel explained all this situation, it's going to come for sure to the markets and to the regulatory landscape. So we'll see. But for the moment, I cannot see it yet in here. We all know how this works. Yet when everything is already floating, it's where entities start to realize and then start taking actions. But normally, it's not something that we many times foresee, and so we take actions in advance.
There is something, while we've got you here, Danny, I'm afraid we're going to have to ask this question, because there's been much mentioned over the last couple of weeks about the wind down of CME and Next Abide and their EU TR operations. Nick last week was talking about there's going to be a shortage of porting dates for new clients to move over to new TRs. I mean, what is going to happen? There must be, that's quite a large slice of business and an awful lot of clients that are going going without a TR right now, right?
So you're sitting at home. You've got your kids and your dogs everywhere. You've got your normal business going on. You've got a series of projects. And all of a sudden, you're going to have to move TR and ARM in some cases. Because let's be honest, Abide was a very successful firm. You know, 70-odd employees, decent amount of capital. They basically built a business. They had done their Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours, those guys, yeah? Now, a lot of them are left, of course. But someone's going to have to move that stuff over. So the history of porting is a terrible one. Given that we have so many TRs, you have to have porting. You have to move it from one to another. But it's not like in custody, where custodians have done it for years. And I know you know how to handle porting of firms, but to handle, what, 300 maybe? And the porting dates, what's it going to be? It's just takes forever. It takes a long time to bring on a big client anyhow. And it means that CME, European Trade Repository, CME TR, Next Abide TR, and the one in Australia, and the arm is going to have to offload it. They're going to need a lot of people for that. They've got to work out where it's going to go as well. And that's why I think now's the time to stand up and say, let's be sensible about it. All these crazy CSV files that are coming in for contracts for differences and so forth. You know, they move from one firm to another, that firm's going to go down. You can lay money on that. It'll go down that day because of the sheer size of those things. And the positions, so everything that goes with trade and transaction reform, positions and so forth, it just won't succeed. In the middle of a pandemic, as we're in the middle of an economic crisis, as we're approaching a financial crisis, mental. So it needs Regis TR, Univista, and DTCC, but you need so many people, so much capital, so much talent to do this. So I think what will happen is that your clients that are out there, the mid-tier ones, you know, will need a lot of help on this, and I don't know where that's going to come from. It's on your shoulders.
On the ESMA side, on the sort of, you know, regulator side, are they worried about three big market players going down? Are they worried that they're going to just, you know, lose a whole load of data that should be coming through because they haven't been able to replace that TR capacity?
Their plan is that if clients are not able to manage, clients and TRs are not able to manage an orderly migration before the end of November, then ESMA and the incumbent TRs will potentially allocate those clients somewhere. So, you know, are they worried? Yes, I'm sure they'd like to see an orderly migration, but those clients will move.
What you could be looking at, and no one wants this situation, is clients that haven't made a decision, that haven't ported, at some point at the beginning of November, being allocated across to TRs. Because the bottom line is, from a market point of view, how on earth can you absorb that? How can you plan that? These are things that need to be project managed. And so nobody wants that scenario or that situation. So the question is, in this perfect tsunami of refit COVID, how can we manage that in a proper, planned and orderly fashion? And I mean, that's the absolute key, is this needs to be done now. It needs to be looked at now. And it takes resources.
And the other question that's still out there is anyone thinking of the UK clients? Seriously, what's going to happen to those guys? Are they going to migrate to an EU 28 TR as of November, only then to have to migrate in January to a UK TR?
Yeah, and vice versa, John. Absolutely. And we're seeing that in conversations now.
That is a great cliffhanger to end on. I'm going to say, Danny, I do hope you can come back. Because every time we get you on the show, it appears to be that we're facing global economic meltdown. So I do come back. You're the danger man.
I would honestly love to. I mean, I love you guys anyhow. I want to come across about this. As soon as the Channel Tunnel is open, I want to come across to go to Luxembourg. I'd love to go to Madrid.
Barbara, can I just say, I'm hoping that we can come and do a live Register our roundup in Madrid when all this is over. We can do a road trip. We could do a road trip.
Who else fancies I'm just happy to guide you over all the super nice pubs and places in Madrid. Ooh. Everywhere.
It's a road trip. Let's do it.
All right. You heard it here first. We'll swing by Luxembourg and pick up John and Laura. We'll get you at some point on the loop back. Maybe you could take. We could go back to San Sebastian after. We'll work out a route round. Danny, where are you based?
West Hampstead.
Yeah, I'll drive from Suffolk, pick you up in West Hampstead. Then we get Nick. Then we'll go across to Luxembourg, grab John. Then we're straight down to Spain. How does that sound? That seems like a good one.
Great.
There we go. We could do it as a rally. We could get other people from the financial services sector. Just, you know, take your car to Canary Wharf and join us. We'll do a gumball rally for the TR space all the way down to Madrid. You heard that first here. And on that note, we're going to say that's all we've got this week on the Register TR Roundup. It is all that remains is to say a big goodbye and thank you to this week's virtual studio. And that is the voice of reason, head of business development, Mr. Nicholas Bruce.
Goodbye, everyone.
And it is head of client services and, without question, the most efficient person in the organization, Barbara Ruiz Alonso.
Goodbye, everyone.
And of course, it's our institutional relations manager, Laura Rodriguez.
Goodbye, and thank you for the invitation again.
And last, actually, because our head of product and acting chief operations officer for the UK, John Kernan.
Bye, everyone. Stay safe.
And a special huge thanks to Danny Corrigan, who is the CEO of the London Reporting House.
Thank you very much indeed. My pleasure. Have a great week.
That's great. I've been Andrew Walker, and I look forward to seeing you on the next roundup. Until then, we're just going to say have a good week, have a safe week, and join us again for all the news and views from the Trade Repository space. Bye-bye.